Loading in 3, 2, 1. Welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It's the cure for the common restaurant. Expert interviews, tools, and tips to get you the restaurant you know it can be. Now, here is your host, Donald Burns, the Restaurant Coach.
And welcome to the Restaurant Coach Podcast. It is the cure for the common restaurant. This is episode 44, and today I am going to be joined by legendary restaurateur Kelly Jones of Kelly Jones Hospitality in Las Vegas. But before we jump in, allow me to go on a little rant about leadership. Leadership is the ability to put others before yourself. It is the ability to see potential in others and then help them raise their standards so they play at a higher level. So many managers call themselves leaders when in fact, they're just followers. They just maintain the status quo and don't push the edge to move the brand forward. You need a true leader in your restaurant. And if here's the thing, if you're not that person, it's okay to admit it. It's not okay not to do anything about it. I know plenty of restaurant owners that should not be the leader of their organization, yet they refuse to step aside and allow a true leader to take the reins and build the brand. If you are an owner, just remember, you do not have to be the leader. You can just be the owner. I know plenty of restaurant owners that have realized that their strength is not running the restaurant. Entrepreneurs are truly wired differently. Most are great at the startup stuff, but they suck at the teamwork stuff. Sometimes the greatest thing you can do is to admit that you're not the best person for the job and then replace yourself. You have probably heard this a million times, that you need to work on your business instead of in your business. So how exactly do you do that? Well, it starts with a conversation. Go to my website, www.therestaurantcoach.com, and schedule a call with me personally. We're going to discuss where your restaurant is now, where you want to be in the next 90 days, and I'm going to give you a crystal clear plan to get there. You just need to take a little action and schedule a call. So now, let's jump into my conversation with Kelly Jones and why service sucks in America. And joining me today on the Restaurant Coach Podcast is the one, the only, the legendary Kelly Jones from Kelly Jones Hospitality. Kelly, how are you today?
I'm fantastic. You?
You are always fantastic.
You know, it's a blessing every day just to get out of bed these days.
I'm telling you, I've been there. It's nice to wake up and go, yes, another chance.
Right.
Yeah. So, hey, I brought you back on the show. You've been on the show a couple times, and I know every time you're on, people, you know, I get great comments about the content you talk about and things like that. But I wanted to kind of talk specifically that you did a presentation last year at Nightclub and Bar about service in America sucks. And I saw that it was so popular that they're bringing you back for part 2.0 in 2020, the Nightclub Bar Show. Can you explain what's really going on with service in America and why it just sucks?
Well, I mean, you know, hospitality by definition is warm, personal, engaging service. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just interesting how technology has now taken over and really has made, you know, hospitality a thing that doesn't exist because everybody's so buried in their phones.
Yeah.
And everybody's so, you know, so not hospitable. You know, the technology and hospitality is a modern day oxymoron, if you will, because there's nothing hospitable about technology. When somebody's staring in their phone, they're multitasking, they're not fully present, they're not engaged. And I think that's a big part of it. That and, you know, people do what's called time stacking, where all of these inventions, whether it's the, you know, email, text messaging, the smartphones, they were all invented ultimately to make you more efficient, thereby giving you more free time. But the opposite has happened because now there's this thing called time stacking where you're multitasking and doing a number of things at the same time. So you're not fully present. You're not fully aware. You know, how many times have you been in conversations with people face to face and they're in their faces in their phones? And, you know, I think that that's a big part of where, you know, we've become so you know, severely ADD, and it's all because of this technology. However, you know, there's a lot of great things about technology, so don't get me wrong. But in the service industry, you know, that's why most restaurants don't allow their employees to have their phones on them while they're working, including mine. Because if they have their phones on them, the, you know, the average person looks at their phone 80 times a day. The average millennial looks at their phone over 100 times a day. And if you, wow, if you break that down, the urge to grab your phone every time you feel it buzz or ring or ding, you know, to stop what you're doing and look at what that text message or Instagram post or Facebook post or whatever just alerted on your phone. And I think, you know, we're also, you know, into being multitasking so busy, and we're not really taking the time to focus on what's important. And in my business, the most important thing is the guest, and mm-hmm. nothing's more important than the guest.
Exactly. Hey, you remember when, like, you know, and I know some people still wear them. I'm going to have to, like, date myself and throw myself under the bus here. You remember how, like, people had, like, the side holster for your phone, you know? You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's gone by way of the fanny pack.
I know it's terrible. But you know, the worst thing was, is like, I would have like these phantom buzzes. I would think like my phone's buzzing, right? And I would like go for it, and like there's nothing there. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah. I mean, that happens to me in my pocket, even when it's just sitting in my pocket, is, you know, constantly. I mean, and even worse, there's times where I think my phone's buzzing and it's not even in my pocket.
That's even worse. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but you know, I think all that really, you know, comes down to why service in America is not good. I mean, because, you know, people, it's, you know, we become so isolated with, you know, our smartphones and our computers that, you know, people aren't doing the things like, you know, smiling, making eye contact, actually, you know, engaging with other people. I mean, odds are if you go into a convenience store to buy a coffee, the only interaction you have with that clerk is $2.50. You know, whatever happened to, hey, how are you today? Thanks for coming in. Did you find everything? Anything else I can help you with? You know, that stuff's, you know, a thing of the past. And it's really sad. You know, listen, you and I are a little old school, and, you know, and in that, you know, we kind of came up through the 80s and 90s, you know, in this, right, you know, in the industry prior to, you know, cell phones and the modern technology. But, you know, also the double-edged sword is that was before food TV and celebrity chefs, and you got into the service industry until you could get a real job. And now, you know, the good thing about technology is it's put so much of the celebrity chef and food TV in the forefront that, you know, it's added great credibility to our industry. So it's all, you know, kind of a double-edged sword.
Truly. Yeah, service in America does suck. That was going to be a
time. And when you get great service, you know, I mean, I can't tell you. That's how I recruit. I get great service in a restaurant. If I have a property in the vicinity, I'm recruiting that person. I will. I have no problem pinching people out of other people's restaurants because they're that good.
Yeah, I don't find anything wrong with that either. Some people say, oh, you shouldn't be doing that. You should be poaching. And it's like, here's my thing. If someone was really happy with where they're at, they would just tell you no right up front, right?
Let me tell you, I learned a long time ago, people follow people. People don't follow companies.
No, they don't follow companies. And people leave because of people, not because of brands.
Yeah, I mean, that's the number one reason people leave a job is because of a conflict with their supervisor or manager. The second reason is because of a conflict with a fellow employee. Yeah. And the third reason is because they don't understand what their upward mobility is because nobody's communicating what's next for them. You know, money is like the fourth or fifth reason people leave a job.
What would you say is one thing any restaurant leader today could do to try to improve their culture?
Listen to your team. Donald, I learned something at 14 years old as a busser and a dishwasher in a Greek diner that I'm more convinced of today. Managers think they know what's going on in the restaurant. You want to know what's going on? Ask your team. Your team knows what's going on. And, you know, you have to create a culture whereby people are not afraid to speak up and voice their opinion. Mm-hmm. That is the biggest thing because, you know, a manager's job really boils down to two things, right? Find what's right and reward it. Find what's wrong and fix it. All too many managers find what's wrong and fix it, and they're not, you know, really emphasizing the good things that their team's doing.
Exactly. You know, one of the questions I love to ask clients, and I ask managers, and I'll ask team members, I'll ask simple question, who do you work for? And it always goes like this. The manager thinks they work for the owner. The team thinks they work for the manager. And I was like, nope, you guys got it backwards.
Yep, everyone works
for the manager. The manager works for the team. The team works for the guest.
And, you know, and at the end of the day, you know, there's nothing more important than that person paying the bill in the restaurant. I mean, I've done training for big companies, and I'm like, you know, I worked, you know, did training for Madison Square Garden for many, many years. And I said to him, I go, you do not work for Madison Square Garden. You do not work for the company that's name is on your check. Yes. You work for every single ticket holder that paid a price to come into Madison Square Garden. That's ultimately who you work for.
That's right. That's right. So we are heading back to Madrid in February. Team USA has been invited back. You were there last year. Actually, you were like the inaugural Team USA when we went last year. And then we did so well. And what did I tell everybody? Hey, if we knock it out of the park, we'll get invited back, right? And we did.
And here we go
and here
again.
Here we go again. And I know the topic you're going to speak on this year in Madrid at Hospitality Innovation Planet is going to be the importance of a service culture. Why do you think that's kind of critical for long-term success?
Well, you know, to me in food and beverage, whether it's hotel food and beverage or restaurants or bars mm-hmm. or lounges, you know, it really comes down to the three pillars that, you know, people pay attention to. You know, the first is the product. I mean, I don't care if it's a burger. Is it the best burger you can make? The second is the vibe. And the vibe is, you know, made up of the furniture, the fixtures, the lighting, the sound, the whole feel of the environment. And then the third piece, which is always the most important piece, is the hospitality, warm, personal, engaging service. And, you know, I tell my team all the time, you know, Maya Angelou has a great quote that says, I've learned that people will forget what you said, people will forget what you did, but people will never forget how you made them feel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a chef, I never would have admitted this when I was cooking, but I'm convinced of it now. I can forgive an overcooked steak. I can't forgive rude or inattentive service or treatment. And you know, at the end of the day, I've had, you know, experiences where the food was good, not great, but the service was unbelievable. I'm going back there every time. I've had places I've gone to where the food was amazing and the service was abysmal. I'll never go back. Right. Because, you know, I'm not going to, you know, food is subjective. You know, you could make something perfect and somebody might not like that, but hospitality is not. That's, you know, you get vibes and feelings from people. And I think that is critical to the service industry. That's why it's called the service industry. You're serving others. And yeah, I tell my team all the time, what is more important when you're working than the guest that walks through that door? And the only answer is nothing. Nothing's more important than that person. Make them feel good. Make them feel happy. Even if, you know, we make a mistake, and I always tell my team, it's not if you make a mistake, it's when you make a mistake. So we have this service culture called the AAA of service recovery. Apologize, acknowledge, act. Apologize, even if it's your not fault. You're apologizing because they're not having mm-hmm. a good experience. Acknowledge. Make sure you understand what their issue is. And then act. Go fix it. Get a manager to the table so the manager can make sure that guest doesn't walk out. Because what's the byproduct? Yelp, TripAdvisor, right. Google review. And let me tell you, as a business owner, I hate all of them. But as a business owner, I pay very close attention to mm-hmm. all of them.
You have to. Yeah. The biggest thing, I think you mentioned it, is like, and I think the question we should be asking our teams is, you know, and I hate it when people say, well, did you give good service? You know, that's not the question we should be asking. We should be asking the question is, how did you make them feel?
Yep. 100%.
Yep. So if you had to start over, you know, from the scratch, from the beginning, I mean, how many restaurants do you have now? How many concepts do you have now?
Well, I have 4 different concepts, 7 different restaurants that I own and operate. But then, you know, I have a management company, so we have mm-hmm. a bunch of different concepts. So we have 16 operations in 8 different states right now.
Right.
If I had to start over, what was your question?
If you had to start over, one restaurant, one concept, one city, What city would you pick and what concept would you do?
Oh, boy. Well, the concept that's just on fire right now is our ramen concept. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's funny. I've had all these fine dining restaurants with all these celebrity chefs. And I laugh because my growth vehicle is noodles and donuts right now. You know, we have a ramen shop in Burlington, Vermont, 62 seats. We do over 400 covers.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
You know, 400 covers a day. You know, it's a really low, you know, low cost of sales. You know, our food mm-hmm. cost is 22%. Our labor cost is about 33%. You know, our margins, you know, we're pulling 20 to 23% to the bottom line every
wow.
month. Yeah. And those are home runs in the restaurant world. But it, you know, so we're looking to replicate those all over the country. You know, as far as the city I'd want to do the next one in Las
right.
Vegas. Because I've been here. I'm very familiar with the market. I love mm-hmm. living here. You know, it's living here and vacation here are two very different things. And we're actually ironically looking at a lease here right next to UNLV to do our third ramen shop.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
We have an LOI out right now. So it's right next to UNLV. And the concept is called Gaku Ramen, which translates mm-hmm. to educated noodle. So, you know, our goal is to put these in college towns all across the country.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. It won't be ready by the time nightclub and bars are.
No, I highly doubt that. In fact, we're just in the LOI phase.
Now you got me hungry for ramen, man. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
Well, I'll tell you what, a nightclub bar show, I'll take you to my favorite Vegas ramen shop.
All right, that's a deal. That's a deal. Because, yeah, we're both speaking there this year.
Yep.
Yeah, we tend to follow each other around when we speak.
We do. This will be the third conference we've spoke at together this year.
Yeah, because we did the restaurant Success Summit in Tucson. We just did that.
Yep.
And then we
bar,
did Nightclub and Bar. We did HIP, Hospitality Innovation Plan. Yep. We did restaurant. And then next year, we're going to be doing it again. We'll be doing HIP, then Nightclub and Bar, and then we got Restaurant Success Summit again in November.
Yep, that's good. So we get awesome. To see each other a few times a year.
I know. It's great, man. I always love seeing you. So let me bring up a hot topic and let me get your input on this. What do you think of the rise of ghost kitchens?
You know, I think they're going to have a shelf life, mm-hmm. In my opinion. You know, and that speaks to a lot of trends right now in the industry. I think delivery is going to be massive. I just took over a vegan restaurant here in Las Vegas in October.
Mm-hmm.
Very successful 4-year run. Just needed a new set of eyes. So my management company took it over. And unbelievably, 45% of our sales is delivery.
Wow.
But, you know, there's a lot of pitfalls and things you have to navigate with delivery. I think delivery is going to absolutely be something that's going to continue to gain traction. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's a huge expense to the operator to do delivery. In fact, the profit of a restaurant is, you know, anywhere, if you're lucky, from 10 to 20%, if you're lucky,
right.
You know, delivery service, on the other hand, not only take between 25 and 30% for the delivery service, but then you've got all the to-go supplies. And in my ramen shops, for instance,
nice.
You know, it's $2. In just to-go supplies
wow.
for a bowl of ramen, you know, between the biodegradable bowl,
mm-hmm,
the,
mm-hmm.
the other container I have to put the broth in because it's so hot because you can't have the noodles and the broth together or it'll overcook, the chopsticks, the spoon, the soy sauce packets, the bag, the napkins, you know, all of that all equals $2 per order of ramen.
Wow.
So if I've got, you know, six bowls of ramen, you know, it's you know, close to $10, you know, because I'm not using extra bags and stuff like that. But, you know, then you add 30% on top of that, and, you know, there's no profit in delivery. So, you know, what we've had to do is we've had to raise our, you know, delivery prices. So our menu prices are $2 cheaper per item than the majority of our menu prices for delivery to be
wow.
able to absorb and offset that 30%.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the ghost kitchen, you know, it's you know, very, very smart thing to do. But I think it's growing too fast and I think it's going to fizzle out. I think, you know, people still want to have deliveries from the restaurant that their favorite restaurants that they can still go to and sit in and, you know, interact with people, versus, you know, this ghost kitchen that's virtually, I don't know where my food's being produced. I don't know who's making my food. And then it's delivered. And, you know, if God forbid there's any kind of an issue, you know, a foreign object in the food or food poisoning or something, who am I going to?
Yeah, exactly. Huh? I'm going to a warehouse.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and so, you know, that's something that's just, you know, I think people want to be more connected to their food. That's, you know, why the proliferation of mixology bars and farm to table restaurants, where, you know, people want to really understand and know and connect with, you know, where their food is sourced and is coming from.
Exactly. So you mentioned you're running a vegetarian or a vegan restaurant in Vegas.
It's vegan.
Vegan. What's the name of it?
Yep.
Give a shout out.
Violet's Vegan. Violet's Vegan. Organic cafe and juice bar.
Ooh, awesome. So I'm going to throw you a curveball here. What do you think about all these plant-based proteins?
Well, I've gotten quite the education over the last couple months on, you know, how to make seitan from scratch and tempeh and a lot of these plant-based proteins. I'll be honest with you. Some of them are outstanding. I mean, unbelievably good. Some of them, I personally don't have the flavor profile or palate for some of them. But, you know, I think this isn't a trend. This is something that is absolutely, you know, going to continue to surge, whether it's vegetarianism or veganism. And I can tell you that, you know, vegans are, you know, very passionate about their lifestyle and their food. And, you know, I don't think it's going away. I think it's going to get bigger and bigger. And I think more and more, you know, meat eaters are going to be turned on to plant-based proteins.
Yeah, I agree. In fact, I'm working with a client right now. We're opening, he's opening a new kind of it's going to be a vegan burger concept. I always kind of describe it as it's going to be like the In-N-Out of vegan burgers. And we're actually using the Impossible Burger. But everything in the whole place, all our recipes that we created, everything's vegan. We've got vegan shakes. It's pretty amazing. And he has pretty rapid plans to expand it. It's going to be called No Moo. It's going to be on Melrose. It's going to be pretty awesome. We're opening up in January. Well,
there's another vegan restaurant that has just opened here in Vegas called No Butcher. and you know, you know, and I think, you know, even if you think about burgers and how far they've come, you know, you used to have a vegetarian burger, you know, 10 years ago that was horrible. Now, you know, you can get amazing, whether it's the Impossible Burger, the Beyond Burger, the Gardenaire, you know, burger, the Black Bean Burger. I mean, there's some really tasty options out there that weren't here 5 years ago.
Exactly. Yeah, you know what? And I mean, you know, when I'm out in L.A. working with him, I eat a lot of, you know, we eat a lot of, you know, Impossible Burgers. I'm telling you. It's a really damn good burger.
Well, the only thing that people don't realize is from a caloric standpoint, it's just as high in calories as a regular burger. You know, the only difference is it's, you know, plant-based protein versus an animal-based protein.
Right.
So it's better for your heart.
Yeah, a little bit. Until I smother it with mayonnaise, veganese.
Right.
So let's talk about another hot topic. What do you think, or how do you feel third-party delivery? Do you think it's helping or hurting our industry?
Well, you know, as I just mentioned earlier, you know, the margins are
terrible.
You know, you just gotta really look at it. And you have to decide for your business individually whether or not it's worth it. I think it's helping because they're not taking up butts and seats in your restaurant. And so, you know, you're certainly increasing your business, you're increasing your marketing profile, and your reach. I think, you know, the thing that, you know, some owners that I've worked at and consulted with is they're not taking into account, you know, marking up their menu prices to offset the cost of the delivery, understanding that you've got all that to go supplies that are also, you know, marking up the cost of the final product. Reaching the guests, but it's not going away. You know, more and more people, just look at the way people are working these days. They don't even need large offices. You know, they're working at WeWork and public office spaces. They're, you know, calling more and more for delivery. You've got more and more people working at home now because, you know, I got a laptop and a cell phone and I can do anything from anywhere.
Right.
And, you know, there are people that will never get up and leave their house or their office. They're going to get everything delivered to them. And that's just the way, you know, society's moving. I do not think that it's a trend or a fad. I think it's going to continue to grow that way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, operators like us are going to have to figure out a way to make money off of it and not, you know, just, you know, eat the 30% delivery fee, all right. the to-go supplies. I think it's really going to be about being thoughtful on how to make money with delivery because delivery is not going to go away.
Definitely. So, you know, I'm a big, huge believer in self-care. So what is one self-care ritual that you do daily?
Well, I'm going to the gym pretty much 7 days a week. And so that's good for my, you know, mind and my health, both physically and mentally. So that's one thing, but, you know, also, you know, I have a 4-year-old at home. So, you know, that's another thing is just, you know, getting down on the ground and playing with him and just, you know, just connecting at a whole nother level, you know, having a kid.
I have to say that you're a pretty brave man. I saw, I think it was on Instagram, your wife put up pictures of you on like the spinny stuff at the fair, at the carnival.
Oh yeah. 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 That was a hoot.
That'd be
yeah. I've always loved thrill rides. You know, I'm amusement park junkie.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
when my four-year-old this past summer went on his first roller coaster ride with me, the best thing in the world was when we get finished, he looks at me, goes, let's do it again.
Oh,
and we awesome. Did.
Yeah. I love roller coasters. Yeah. Bigger, faster, better. That's I love those.
Absolutely.
It's the ones that spin around consistently. I just don't like those.
I'll ride on anything. That's a thrill ride.
I like up and down. I don't mind like the roller coasters or the drops, stuff like that. But man, the spinning stuff like drives me nuts.
Yeah, I'm just a speed junkie, whatever it is.
You ever been in a race cars?
Yeah, they have down at the Motor Speedway. You can rent a race car and go around the track. I've done that a couple times.
Oh, maybe we'll do it when I'm out in Vegas.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So if you could live in any time period, what would it have been and what would your job be or what would you have wanted to be?
Well, I'd love to be a king in the medieval times because, you know, you're the king. But in all reality, you know, I'm a jam band junkie. So if I was able to relive any time, it would probably be being a lot older than I was in the 60s and following around, you know, the Grateful Dead and Jefferson Airplane and Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin and the Doors. You know, I listen to all of them all the time, but it's all on crackly vinyl now and not actually, you know, going to see these guys in concerts because I go to concerts like it's my job. I mean, I probably go to 70, 80 concerts a year easily. And you know, I go to these jam band festivals, these 3-4 day festivals every year. And, you know, that's kind of how I get my yayas out. Work hard, play hard.
That's it. Isn't that how you started?
Well, I did. I worked, in restaurants, you know, for my 4 years in high school. And then right. after high school, I graduated 258 out of 262, 4 from the bottom of my class. So I didn't take SATs because college just wasn't an option. But instead, a friend of mine and I, we ended up buying a van and following the Grateful Dead for a couple of years. And always got jobs in restaurants because restaurants are always hiring and you could eat mm-hmm. for free. And let me tell you, when you live in a van, eating for free is a really good perk. So that's kind of how I got into this whole business.
There you go. And look at you now. Build a career around it.
Yeah, no, listen, I don't advocate not going to college. Trust me. However, you know, I'm a kinesthetic learner. Show do. And that's what the restaurant business is all about.
Awesome. That's it. Any last piece of advice you want to give listeners?
Come to Spain and see us speak at the exactly. HIP conference. It's really, you know, it's such an amazing event that's put on. It's, you know, Europe's largest hospitality conference and, you know, it's vast, it's massive. And boy, the Europeans sure know how to do hospitality.
Oh, I mean, we had some incredible meals there. Ramon at, you know, La Maison. I mean, we had some incredible food, and everyone, again, you know, here's the thing I also think too, and you know, and you probably would agree with me, hospitality, it transcends all cultures and languages.
Absolutely, it does. Mm-hmm. And by the way, are we going back to Ramon's? Because that was amazing.
Yeah, we're going back for the duck and for the lamb. Don't worry, we're going. I already told him we're coming. He hit me up on, he wants one of my Restaurant Coach jackets. I said, I'll get you a jacket, but we're coming for dinner again. He's like, cool deal.
Yeah, and by the way, how cool is that? Because, you know, I mean, you know, I'm so blessed, Donald, that like my favorite thing in the world is what we did there last year. Great
awesome.
Company, great food, great mm-hmm. wine. We sat there. It was a 4-hour lunch. It was amazing, and that we got to parlay that into a career. How cool is that?
And you know, the thing was that 4-hour lunch did not feel like a 4-hour lunch.
I know, but
yeah,
but
it was just
my point. That's
yeah.
That's you know, listen, Europeans laugh at us all the time because they're like, you know, in America you live to work. In Europe we work to live,
exactly.
And they're so right.
No, it's true. I mean, in America we go out to eat. You know, in Europe they go out to dine. You know, they go out to share
absolutely.
Life and share memories. And it was, so yeah, I'm on my ham detox from now until February because we eat so much damn ham. I'm on when we're in Spain. I'm going on my ham detox right now, so I'm ready for it.
Yeah, that Iberico though. I mean, when you're eating Iberico in the U.S., that's one thing. When you're actually eating it in Spain, that's another thing.
It was amazing. This stuff is so great.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, my friend. Always great to have you on the show, as always.
Always a pleasure. And next time I see you, we'll be in Madrid.
It will be in Madrid. Happy holidays
and
to you and your family.
Happy holidays.
All right. Thanks, Kelly. Appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, Donald. Ciao.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Coach Podcast with Donald Burns. Tune in next time as we serve up more ways to maximize your potential. Visit our website at www.therestaurantcoach.com or download episodes at iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Spotify.